Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Dan Glickberg from Fairway Market here with a delicious Thanksgiving tip. Roasted butternut squash is a nutritious side dish that your whole family will love. We get our fresh squash locally from Martin Farms in Brockport, New York. Find our recipe and more tips at fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome to Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, Vice President of the James Beard Foundation. And every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, we're talking about taste. Why? Because taste matters. Duh. You can ask us questions if you have any questions about taste or about our topic today, which is actually visual representations of taste. We're talking today with Jamie Tiampo, who's a great food photographer and videographer and expert on all things about depicting visual taste, as well as Dolores Custer, one of the most renowned food stylists, who's calling in from Portland. So if you have any questions today about food styling, food photography, food videography, food television, food, taste, anything, maybe you want to ask us about your Thanksgiving turkey. Whatever it is, give us a call. You can reach us at 718-497-2128, or you can email us questions at info@heritageradionetwork.com. Jamie Tiampo, welcome to the show. Dolores, are you there?
I am here.
Hi, both
Dolores.
Of you.
Hi, Jamie. Good to talk with both of you.
Good to talk to you, too.
Good. So Dolores is speaking to us from her new home in Portland, Oregon. What's going on? What's going on in Portland?
Oh, I have been invited out for dinner tonight, and I just picked up the guide to the best restaurants in Portland, and it is full of possibilities.
That's exciting.
Portland's a wonderful food city.
Actually, sitting here in this wood-lined radio studio in the middle of Roberta's
like
in Brooklyn. Exactly. Yeah. We could be in Portland with you. We're there in spirit.
Okay.
So let's talk about the visual representation of taste with the two of you. It's something that I think fascinates me personally, and I know it's something that we don't always think about when we're looking, flipping through beautiful food magazines, cookbooks, which are just sort of mouthwateringly delicious looking, and even when we're watching TV. Tell us a little bit about what it is that both of you do. Let's start with you, Dolores.
Well, for 35 years, I food styled in New York City in all mediums. I worked with producing cookbooks, worked on magazines. I did ads, commercials, shot movies. Wow. So I worked in all the various medium. And then I ended up writing a book about food styling.
Right.
One of the things that was, I have always taught classes in food styling in various locations, but... Writing the book made me really think about what I sort of just did naturally.
Right, and so how in a nutshell, in one sentence, what is it that your goal is as a food stylist across the different platforms?
Okay, to make the food look as mouthwatering as possible.
Excellent, Jamie.
Yeah.
You're between the food stylist and the ultimate consumer. Tell us a little bit about the visual representation of taste.
Well, to me, food, everything is driven by how it looks. When you sit down in a restaurant, you have a plate in front of you, you're like, wow, that looks great. Before you even tuck into it and start eating, you have the taste, you have the aroma, you have what it looks like, you have the aroma, and you mm-hmm. have the taste. Mm-hmm. And the visual aspect is what hits you first. When you're flipping through a magazine, that's the only thing you have. When you're looking at television, that's, you know, really the food is represented by how it looks. So, you know, the visual aspect of food is, to me, the most important. Now, that's my job, of course, so I'm
right.
kind of biased.
Well, but the role of pictures, I mean, every publisher will tell you, a cookbook without pictures is a much more difficult sell because there's nothing to sort of engage, to use Dolores's term, that mouthwatering reaction.
Absolutely, and that's how you sell a cookbook, is the first thing that the consumer looks at is the spine and the title and the jacket design. They flip it open and they see, oh, wow, that looks really good. I could make that.
Right, and as someone who's written four cookbooks myself, only mm-hmm. one of which has pictures... They're different when they have photographs.
Absolutely. It has a very different feel to it.
Right.
And when you can actually visualize, you know, I actually write recipes based on how they're going to look in the future, not necessarily how what the recipe should be. It's like, how is this going to plate up the best?
Interesting.
So, and of course, it has to taste great, right, and all that, but for me, the visual leads first.
Oh, interesting. So Dolores, having had such a long and unique career, I would say, tell us, have there been trends? I mean, we hear horror stories about wallpaper paste and glue and all that sort of stuff, but you must have seen a lot of changes in styling of food over the years, or what we think is mouthwatering or what looks delicious.
Right. Yes. That's been one of the joys. I feel like the history of food styling sometimes. But no, I remember when ice cream could not be shown with melting.
Oh.
Absolutely could not.
Because,
I mean, it had to be perfect.
Because of the client? Because could not?
That was the standard,
right,
at the time when I first started. I started in the early 80s, and this was the time of perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a sort of a timeline on a look at food and how it's been presented over the years. And I call the 80s the year of the black plate. It was upscale and small portions and perfection and garnishes that we would never, ever do today.
And that's true. That was true both, I guess, in restaurants and in,
mm-hmm,
in the way people just thought food should be. Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm,
what came after that?
I remember that I saw a picture on the cover of a magazine, and it was ice cream melting all over the place. And it was Donna Hay,
uh-huh,
from Australia. And I would run into other food stylists, and they'd say, "Did you see the ice cream melting?"
Because that was a watershed moment.
Yeah.
Donna Hay in general, or that it was,
mm-hmm,
an ice cream shed moment, maybe.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Both. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
And the same thing happened with pancakes.
they melted? No.
No, but pancakes had to be a perfect stack. And I've worked on many pancake jobs over the years. And the top one had to have a perfect texture and be a little smaller than the one right below it, and then a little, that one a little smaller than the next, so that we could get the syrup, hitting each layer.
Right.
And then in 97, I saw a stack of pancakes that looked like a child had done them. And they weren't really stacked. They were just sort of all over the place, and it was blueberry pancakes, and they weren't all an even color and this sort of thing. And again, we, all of us food stylists who had worked on those perfect stacks for so many years, went, "Oh my goodness, you know." So we've gone very, very much from the perfect look to, mm-hmm, the incredible natural look.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jamie can probably talk about the photography part of it, going from film to digital.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to ask about the technology.
There, in the last 10 years, there's been an absolute revolution and sea change in how images are captured, from film to digital. And that transition is pretty much complete at this point.
And how does that impact some of the things that Dolores was talking about, or mm-hmm, other changes?
Well, the biggest change is in workflow in the studio, where now you can see instantly what the image is going to be, whereas before in film you had Polaroids and you wouldn't know exactly what the exposure and the shot would be like until you got the actual film back from the lab.
Right.
So,
well, and not just in the studio. I worked on a photo shoot for GQ a few, mm-hmm, years ago, and they were sending the images immediately to the editors from,
yeah,
the studio. I thought, I don't want to be this photographer. That must be a nightmare.
It can be.
You can
certainly,
right,
get clients that are almost too intimately involved in the,
right,
in the production process. But for me, it's really made a huge difference in that what you see is what you get, and we can make those changes instantly, and it in a way it makes it a lot, you can streamline the creative process by having that instant feedback and by knowing exactly what you're going to be delivering,
mm-hmm,
and we can tweak and get the image right in camera and not rely as much on post-production. I don't like to rely on post-production as much. A lot of photographers will, you know, they'll shoot something and then manipulate it in Photoshop afterwards.
Okay, I was going to ask if that replaced some food styling required.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And post-production, explain that a little bit.
So post-production is the act of going in afterwards and going in Photoshop and tweaking, you know, I want this piece of parsley over here instead, or, you know, that top pancake should be a little bit smaller so we can squeeze that down a little bit. And you can do an incredible amount of work in post and make images look stellar. And my style is just to make it look good, great in camera, really.
Right.
We do tweak on the back end, you know, the contrast and saturation and to really make a good picture great, but we don't take a terrible picture and make it look okay.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And some of the tools, some of the tools that might increase the deliciousness, the mouth-wateringness that you could, what could you do to a picture that's been taken, I mean, pre or post? I'm asking this to both of you. Like, what, besides the perfection, Dolores, or the butter pat sitting just so, that kind of thing, what do you think are the elements that make something look delicious?
Well, I have one shot that I did that everybody goes, ooh, and it's a chocolate bread pudding.
Mm-hmm.
And with gorgeous chocolate curls on top, but the chocolate sauce is just beginning to drip over the side mm-hmm. of the container. And I think that we call it the ooey-gooey effect.
The ooey-gooey effect. So we like oozy, gooey, mm-hmm. because...
Mm-hmm. It's unctuous and sexy.
Okay.
Yeah. A piece of meat sitting on a plate that's dry is not mouth-watering.
Right.
It needs to be oozing, you know.
Unless you were perhaps some people's mothers who overcooked everything, and that's what it reminds you of. But even there, right, like I think food photography and certainly the role that the stylist plays is aspirational in some ways. I mean, Martha Stewart,
absolutely,
I think, is an example,
it is.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the biggest thing that you need to do to make food look great is cook well and make good food to begin with, okay? Without having that first... without having the food look great to begin with, there's no way I can make a great image out of it. If it's just kind of a, you know, there's a big trend right now where, you know, messy is the new black, but it's incredibly difficult to make messy and random look good.
To truly
have a random kind of feel. It takes a lot of effort.
And describe what you mean by a random feel. We should try to be a little more visual for the people listening, because of course they are just listening. So,
sure.
what's an attractive messy picture?
So, like as Dolores was saying, and by the way, everyone needs to understand that Dolores is like the fairy godmother of the entire industry, and she's she's amazing and awesome.
So make your wishes, everyone.
Yes, exactly.
Well, certainly one of the people who, almost perfected the field, if not invented, but certainly made it a legitimate
and
valuable career.
Again, Mitchell, that's one of the things that's been interesting to watch, you know, the changes. When I first started, I had to have a home ec degree. I was female and had to have a home ec degree to work for major food companies.
Wow.
And practically every photographer that I worked with was male. Today, that's totally, totally changed.
Hmm.
And now they love the fact that people are very creative. We have to start with the basics, really good cooking and baking skills. And in fact, when people would interview me for working as an assistant, one of the first questions I'd say are how good are your baking skills?
Interesting.
And if they were a good baker, I knew that they could handle the cooking. But
right.
if they said, you know, I really prefer cooking to baking, I went, you know, I
right.
think not.
And that's because of the precision that bakers have?
Exactly.
And, right, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good.
So,
yeah.
Jamie?
With food styling, a lot of food styling is being prepared and having all the different components and thinking ahead. You know, if I'm making lasagna, for instance, if I'm doing this for print versus television. For television, it's much more complicated because you have to have swap outs and different stages of doneness, essentially. but you have to keep everything separate, the beef from the tomatoes, from the spinach, from the ricotta, you know, and from the noodles that are pre-cooked, and really assemble them in a way that exposes all the different visual elements without just being a big gloppy mess. And you have to be really precise about that with something like lasagna, which is, you know, it's a casserole.
Right.
And you have to think about what it's going to look like now versus what it's going to look like when it's cooked as well.
Right.
You know, for instance, if you put basil on top of it, you know, you have to know enough about how basil reacts in heat to understand that once it goes in the oven, that basil is going to turn black. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Do you want to show a level of doneness, or do you want to have, you know, that green pop on there, in which case you would put the basil on after it comes out of the oven?
Right. So would you use the word deception for any of this? I mean,
No. I would not say that it's deceptive at this point. Food styling has really evolved where it's all about having great food and putting the food first. And what we do is real food, and we're making the actual product. We're just putting a ridiculous amount of skill and effort and manpower behind it to manipulate that food to make it look great. But we're not using substitutions. Mm-hmm. You know, there are horror stories about using motor oil or, you know, shoe polish or glue and things like that, which, you know, it does happen, certainly. But for the most part right now, the trend is really depicting the real food in the best light possible.
And maybe we should, just before our break, talk a little bit about the why. I think there's an element we forget sometimes. Obviously, that lasagna that really, if you look closely, is a mess that we're eating in someone's house. You know, visually, perhaps it's a mess, although it's delicious, but you're just going to eat it. But the photograph sticks around forever, really. Mm-hmm. And so it's how much are you thinking about not even just the taking of the picture, but the book in 10 years and what that, you know, that image lasts forever, really, you know, as opposed to any of the food that you might eat and think is wonderful until you, you know.
Ethereal kind of consumption.
Right, in some ways, which makes me think about the difference between editorial photography and advertising photography, or
big difference.
Big, huge difference.
Yeah. Major, major difference.
And that's because?
I think in advertising, they say they want a more natural look oftentimes, but they still want perfection. I'll give you an example. If I'm shooting a beautiful hamburger for a major chain, they may send in probably about 5 to 10 flats of hamburger buns that may have already been picked ahead of time for the best looking ones. And then we sort through and find the ones that are the prettiest.
Right.
With editorial for a magazine, if the bun is a little squished or cracked or whatever, oftentimes that's exactly what they want, the more natural look for magazines. So that's a really, really big difference in advertising. And
with packaging especially, you know, you do a shot of peas, for example. You'll go through 2,000 peas, picked, hand-picked one by one,
it's
to
terrible.
Get the perfect peas, the perfect 50 peas.
On the box of frozen peas.
Absolutely.
We need to take a break, but we'll continue this fascinating conversation when we get back.
Wonderful.
Staring up into the solar system, all the stars are fixed up in the sky. I just want to sparkle for a moment before I
So welcome back to Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. I'm talking today with two people who specialize in the visual representation of taste, Jamie Tiampo, who, in addition to being a food photographer and a videographer, operates a great new studio that people are using for all sorts of cool shooting of photos and TV shows and things in the Lower East Side called Seafood.
Seafood Media Kitchen Studios, yeah.
Seafood Media. And we've got Dolores Custer on the line, one of the really the creators or the professionalizers of the field of food styling as food we want to eat rather than food that we just want to look at. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
If anyone has any questions for either of our guests, you can call us at 718-497-2128 or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.com. So now I guess it's a good time to ask if the two of you, if you have any favorite representations of food out there, or favorite magazines you think do a good job, or is there a cookbook or a TV show you think that our listeners might be able to flip through or find that represent food in a really cool or delicious, mouthwatering way?
I would say Food Styling, The Art of Preparing Food for the Camera by Dolores Custer.
That sounds a little technical.
You can buy it now on Amazon.com.
Of course. Well, certainly that book is probably behind whatever thing you're about to tell me.
Yeah.
For the magazines, something that comes to mind, a place?
Well, so one interesting trend that's been happening is really on Bon Appetit, for instance. Mm-hmm. If you look at Bon App from 3 years ago versus today, the underpinnings of the magazine have totally changed, and mm-hmm. it's a really interesting evolution to see that. Whether or not you agree with it, it's... it has become a much more almost fashion-forward style.
Could you describe that style visually a little bit, or the change? We actually had the new editor-in-chief, Adam Rappaport, was on an earlier show.
Yep, absolutely. And Adam Rappaport is just an amazing kind of editorial director, and he has his roots are in fashion as well from GQ. So you can see that in the photography and the styling. I would say there's a little bit more hard light in there in general, and kind of more fanciful depictions of food. The food itself is really more contextual now as well, versus before with kind of classic Bon App was you know the plate
a shot right
yeah and a shot.
What about you, Dolores? Something that's caught your eye lately?
The magazine that I give my granddaughters is Fine Cooking. Mm. And again, that's a magazine that has made some major artistic changes. It's one that I can always rely on because I think that, you know, they test their recipes well and that sort of thing. And it's good basics, but they have also made a major change in the look of the magazine in the last few years.
Can you describe that change just so...
Well, I think it's a younger look, a more natural look. I think most of the magazines are looking at a for a younger audience,
right?
And so a little more illustration than there used to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I first started out, there were quite a few things that were illustrated. In fact, Gourmet Magazine didn't have a photography on its cover, I think, until about 1954 or something like that. You know,
so
it all,
12 years,
it had all been illustrated.
Wow.
And now we're going back to more illustration.
Right. I'm thinking of Lucky Peach, the new Dave Chang, Peter Meehan collaboration with McSweeney's, which just the other day, people were flipping through the second issue in my apartment. I had a few people over, and non-foodies were so intrigued by it in a way that I thought, well, they must have struck a chord because it just was engaging for someone who wasn't even that interested in the subject necessarily. What has the impact, there has to have been an impact, Jamie and I are sitting here with our iPads, and obviously, there are the food blog, I've taken 2,000 pictures myself with my crappy camera and my iPhone over the years,
right.
And so clearly the representations that people are seeing, are bombarded with, of images have changed, and so how do you think that has or will impact the professional, sort of, what you guys do?
It's been very interesting. Moving to Portland, you know, has presented a new look for me. There's a major.
It's got a beard and tattoos, the new look? Or no?
It's trying to occupy something.
I haven't yet done it, but anyway, there's a major upscale grocery store chain that has put out a magazine, and I'm seeing, you know, that was something that probably started happening about 10 years ago, and it's only grown, mm-hmm. you know, with the edibles, mm-hmm. Edible Portland, Edible Brooklyn, Edible mm-hmm. Manhattan, and so forth. But I'm finding now that when I look at the credits, the people who wrote the developed the recipes, wrote the articles, also oftentimes did the photography.
Oh, right. So because it's so easy and accessible.
Yeah. And some what I'm seeing is some really, really good stuff, but I'm also seeing some really, really bad stuff.
Yeah. Technology has really democratized the industry, and it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. You know, mm-hmm. democracy is always messy.
So, and speaking of Portland, we've just gotten a question emailed to us that one of our listeners wants to know if the focus on local and organic foods has had a change in sort of the perhaps naturalness or mm-hmm. messiness of representations of food.
Yes. Absolutely. You know, you see a lot more farm-to-table type imagery where you've got the crusty old farmer with crooked teeth, you know, holding up a bunch of carrots and has a more organic feel, so to speak, versus, 15 years ago where those carrots would be perfectly washed and peeled and arrayed out in a fan on a pristine table.
But even the food, I mean, we're sitting here from our studio, we can see the dining room at Roberta's, and it's funny to think about what a perfect stack of pancakes would look like here on a beautiful plate. Like, it almost doesn't fit here.
Right. Not in this context.
Yeah. Right, which this context has become a pervasive context thanks to cities like Portland and mm-hmm. Oakland and all that sort of thing. And so somehow our evolution of, it isn't just food styling that's changed, but what our understanding and appreciation of food and what good food is has changed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the same time, you know, this week in New York, we have Nathan Myhrvold in town, who is the author, but also the sort of conceiver of that incredible The Modernist Cuisine cookbook, which was, as much as anything, a book about food photography. You know, he invented ways to take pictures of things that had never been photographed, but in a very, very, very perfection-oriented way. Food that also would look funny here in this setting. Can perhaps, Jamie, you want to say something about that whole project? And
sure.
Maybe?
I mean, that is an amazing just tome of knowledge in photography.
About modernist cooking.
Right. And that is certainly a style that doesn't fit a lot of people. But you really have to respect the amount of knowledge and work that went into creating that whole project.
Right.
What they did is things like, you know, slicing a barbecue in half and putting a Pyrex glass up against the one face so that you could stack glowing embers of charcoal and you could see through. There's a lot of that. That book is really characterized by its cutaways and infographics, almost.
Of things cooking,
and how will cook the perfect stir fry with, you know, the right amount of wok hay and why that is, why that, you know, you have vegetables that cook under, you know, 100,000 BTU taste differently than if it's done in your nonstick skillet on your 10,000 BTU stove at home.
Right. Our half hour, unfortunately, is drawing a little bit to a close. But before we go, I'd love to ask both of you, if people are interested in getting into this field of visual representations of food, however that we interpret that, what do you suggest?
Well, I teach a class at ICE, the Institute of Culinary Education, together with James Peterson, and we do the kind of basics of food styling and photography. And that's a great way to kind of get your feet wet. But what I would say is the most important thing to do is get in touch with food stylists. You know, look them up on the internet and call them up and say, hey, I'd like to assist you for a day or a week or a month and really learn from that experience.
And also buy my book.
And
I do teach. I continue to teach. So people can be in touch with me at DoloresCuster.com. Mm-hmm.
Where there are some great images, actually. I love them. I was on that site yesterday.
Thank you.
Yeah, some great photographs. Yours too, Jamie. What is your website? For
We have two websites. One is seafoodmedia.com. That's SeeFoodMedia.com. And that's really the studio operations, where we have four kitchen sets, residential kitchen sets that are really optimized for television production. And then EatTV.com, EATTV.com is our editorial platform, where we go out and create our own stories about producers of food that they're really interesting to us.
Written stories or video or everything?
Video.
Video.
Yeah.
So has anything intrigued you lately in particular around town?
What has intrigued me lately around town is really the, well, I mean, this is intriguing everyone, but the real connection of urban farming and food and nutrition. And so that's a really the biggest and best trend that has been popping up in recent times, and people realizing finally that you know, you are what you eat.
Right. Well, and certainly for you and Dolores in your new home, and here for us in the middle of a restaurant that grows a large percentage of all of its food in its backyard and on its roof, that's a trend that I think is both visually and intellectually stimulating. I wonder, just before we go, if you could, let's see, one of the things about looking about the way visual food is represented is we don't often notice the changes. You know, it's like fashion too. You think that you were fashion forward until you see a picture of what you were wearing 5 years ago and you think, wow, things have changed. And the same is true if you've been subscribing to a magazine. Gourmet is a perfect example over the years, where you don't think it's changed and then you see an issue from 10 years ago and you think, my God, we used to eat like that. Let's forget the past. Going forward, one word about what you guys think the future of food visual representation is. Dolores?
I think, and I hope we're still connected. I've been clicking a little bit here, but I think that I've been interested in a quarterly magazine called Canal House that's being produced. I think blogging is growing. When I started writing my book, the word blog did not exist.
Right, and people, bloggers have become, there are a few of them take beautiful photographs, while a lot of them don't.
Absolutely.
And Jamie, future, something coming?
Well, on the technology side, really, you're seeing a lot more people starting to create their own video. It is still a lot of work to do that, so that's not as common to do it well. There's certainly a lot of drivel out there as well. But, really, you know what I like to do is, there's a magazine out of Australia called Delicious Magazine, which is really cool. It's a really well put together magazine. And the fun part about it is that you can see, you know, they're counter-cyclical to us and season-wise. So they're having Christmas in July. So it's kind of interesting to see what they're thinking of essentially 6 months before we do. So that's kind of a fun thing to do.
Great. Well, this has been a delicious and stimulating conversation. Thanks you both, Jamie, and thanks, Dolores, for listening. I mean, for talking. You people at home are listening. Thank you for listening. Next week, we're talking to Belinda Chang, who is a James Beard Award-winning sommelier, and she's the general manager now, in addition to the wine director of the Monkey Bar. And Belinda is a charm. I won't be able to get a word in edgewise, so think about your questions for wines for Thanksgiving, but also just wines in general. No one makes delicious wine more accessible than Belinda, who's also teaching a series of classes at the Beard House. And thank you for listening to Taste Matters. I'm Mitchell Davis, and we'll be here next week at 11 a.m. on heritageradionetwork.com.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.